head coach of the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers, Jeff Ross. Today I'm with Matt Jones, Kevin Harnett, Pat Forty. I'm with the new Chariot, Kristen Wall, United States Congressman John Yarman, Sarah Bohanser, and
welcome to the Rusty Satellite Show with your host, Rick Redding. The show airs every week exclusively here on the Louisville.am Podcast Network. Rick's ready to start ranting and raving about his hometown right now. So here's Rick.
And here we are on a very special Rusty Satellite Show, home of the most interesting people in the Ville. I have in the studio with me a guest co-host. We haven't had one in a while, and this was very special to have my pal Mark Hebert in the studio.
That's me.
You were the guest on the very first Rusty Satellite Show, and now we're at 269.
269. That was a long time ago, I guess, when I was the first guest on the Rusty Satellite Show.
That's right. I remember coming out to your house not knowing what I was doing.
You still don't.
And I still don't. I still fumble around a little bit here in the studio. But we got this great studio here, and Mark, I'm glad to have you, you in. We're going to talk about a lot of things, but one sad note, we lost our friend John Asher this week.
Yeah, that's a tough one. John was a friend to both of us and basically a friend to everyone in the world. He was one of those guys that was just seemed like he was just friends with everyone. I don't know anybody that didn't like John, and seems like everyone knew John Asher when really all they knew him through was radio or TV or seeing him talking about the Kentucky Derby at Churchill Downs.
Right, and he was a great friend of the Rusty Satellite Show. Not only was he a guest on the show 2 weeks, and this week I am rerunning an interview I did with John in 2016, and I listened to the show this week, and to that interview this week, and it's just really says everything about who he is. He talked about how much he loved his job, what his routine was on Derby Day, and it's just the essential thing. So I thought for the first time ever on the Rusty Satellite Show, I'd repeat an interview, and I think you'll find it very interesting.
Looking forward to hearing that one. Well, I think I heard it originally when you aired it. I think it was really good. He talked about a bunch of different topics.
Yeah, it really was. And always at Derby time, I would call John and say, John, I need some Rusty Satellite Show guests. Who you got? And he came up with Kevin Flannery, the president. He got me Travis Stone. I talked to Darren Rogers. I talked to all the people, a lot of people over there, and not one of them was reached without the help of John Asher. So anyway, great friend of the show. We're going to talk about that a little bit in the second part of the show. I got to tell you that one thing that's coming up in the second part of the show is our Bourbon City Guest of the Week. And Mark, have you ever been to Jephthah Creed?
Been to what? Jephthah Creed? Distillery. No, I have not.
Okay, well, I have the scoop on it. I talked to Joyce and Autumn Nethery out there. It's a family business. They have... thus far, I know you don't dabble in this stuff, but they have
I
vodka.
Wish I could.
they've been in business since 2014, and coming in January, I think it's January, or at least in the spring, is when their bourbon is aged enough to be bottled. So that's what's going on out there. Right now, they got moonshine and vodka, but they have an event on Friday nights called Jammin' at Jephthah.
Well, that's kind of cool.
So you can go out and hang out. If you're in Shelbyville, there's a place to go to listen to some good music. And
yeah, I've seen it right off the interstate there.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So that's my Bourbon City Guest of the Week. That's coming up. And also, I usually take this time to thank my sponsors I might mention, I know you do some work with my sponsor, Passport Health Plan.
I do.
They've really been great. I do this project with them on their website called PassportWellbeing.com. And there's always a great, cool story up there that I've written. And you've been involved in some video work with them, right?
I have. And I'm actually getting ready to do a story about a program that Passport's had for the past several years where they provide grants to University of Louisville healthcare folks and folks across the state of Kentucky. And it's improving the health of thousands and thousands of Kentuckians, courtesy of Passport Health Plan.
It's a good deal.
And supplying the money.
And I'm sure you've been... I remember you and I were both at the groundbreaking over there at 18th and Broadway. They are moving dirt around over there now. Have you seen it lately?
I have, and it looks like they're... I think they're supposed to be done in late 2019 with that brand-new headquarters building on Broadway, which really be a shot in the arm for West Louisville.
It's going to be great. It's going to be great. My other sponsor, of course, Louisville Tourism, which brings you the Bourbon City Guest of the Week. I'm happy to have them along. And my other two sponsors, I'm sure you've noticed, Hebe, have improved my health.
Yes, actually, I haven't noticed it's improved your health.
My friends at Heiser Health started in March with a program when I was diagnosed with diabetes, and Peggy Heiser over there fixed me up. She I radically changed my diet. I've lost 30 pounds or so, and I have feel better. I'm healthy. And if you're interested in doing the same thing, you should call them at Heiser Health. You can go to HeiserHealth.com. And also, as of a couple of weeks ago, I can see you more clearly now, Hebe.
I've heard that. But you still can't follow the flight of the golf ball well enough. Maybe it's because you hit it so far.
That's right.
That could be the problem with you right now.
My strength is outdoing my vision. But I got LASIK a few weeks ago at Eye Care Institute, and I recommend them for any eye treatment you need to go. If you just need a regular checkup, but they are the best in the city at LASIK. Dr. John Meyer is my guy. He's going to be on the show here in a few weeks, and you'll hear more about LASIK with the Eye Care Institute. You can call them right now at 502-589-1500 and get yourself fixed up with the Eye Care Institute right there on Story Avenue in Butchertown. All right, so as I said, this is the first time ever on the Rusty Satellite Show. We're going to listen to my interview with John Asher from just before Derby in 2016. And then Mark and I will be back to talk about that and some other stuff that's going on with his job over at the University of Louisville. And we'll look forward to joining you then.
I admit, I used to think people addicted to painkillers just needed to toughen up, until it happened to my daughter. She really needed help. Thanks to Passport, we got it for her. Our doctor and her Passport case manager made sure she got the services and treatment she needed. Together, we got through it.
Find out how you can get Passport at PassportHealthPlan.com/together. Passport Health Plan. We're in this together.
John, we're sitting here in the press room at Churchill Downs, where I guess this is where the winning trainer sits after the race,
On the first Saturday of May, after we run the Derby at approximately 6:50 or so, and then after all the celebration in the winner's circle and the roses going over the withers and the governor and the toast and the national television interview, everyone streams back to this space.
There you go.
And then we have the winning owner and the winning trainer and the winning jockey here to talk about the experience. Yeah, it's a special little place.
It's a heavenly place. I've been here
a couple times a year.
At that time, it's really cool. But there's so many cool little spots in this great big facility. But let's get to you. I mean, I think you were made for this job, right? There's no better ambassador.
I pretty much, I'm the luckiest man alive to be here. It's been a lovely friendship, as Bogey said at the end of Casablanca. I was a kid that grew up not certainly in horse country. Grew up in about an hour and a half from Louisville and near Litchfield, Kentucky. And my family got together, watched the Derby on TV once a year. It was a family tradition. And then one year the light bulb just came on. I thought this is a great thing. So I learned about it, followed it through the years, and was lucky enough after a pretty solid radio news career to find my way here in 1997. This is my 20th Kentucky Derby at Churchill Downs, my 34th overall.
I always ask people if they remember the first Derby you attended in person.
Yeah, absolutely. Godot del Sol, 1982.
God, that makes me feel old because
my first Derby.
Mine was Affirmed.
Yeah, well, you're not too far behind. Affirmed. Very fine Triple Crown winner and of course the last one, and you could just gauge your history from Affirmed to American Pharoah last year, because that was the gap in Triple Crown.
That's exactly right. I had this deal where I saw Kentucky beat Tennessee in like 1984 and never did it again in football, so that was fun. But let's talk about the big announcement this week. I know it's all Derby, but you all had a non-Derby announcement that's like big news for Louisville.
Very exciting. I think great for the community, great for racing fans here, and great for racing fans throughout the region that the Breeders' Cup is making its return here for the first time since 2011. It'll be here in 2018. course, it had a very successful run last year at Keeneland, and Keeneland and Lexington did an incredible job of hosting. But we're thrilled it's back here. It'll be the ninth time that the Breeders' Cup has been held here. We will again at that point tie Santa Anita for the most Breeders' Cups. They are hosting this year, so they will move past us. We're currently tied at eight. It'll be their ninth this year, and then our ninth in 2018. But it's a very different physical plant,
right?
It
seems like it's a bigger gap. It seems like I remember a bunch of them in a row or something.
At least we had two. The last time we had a Breeders' Cup here in 2011, that was the second of back-to-back years, 2010, 2011, the first time we've had the two-day event here. And we've had them within a couple of years before. We hadn't had back-to-back years, but had been a regular, almost, you could set your watch by every, three, 4 years. Last few years, I think the Breeders' Cup, and a lot of people thought it was just we had ticked off the Breeders' Cup somehow, and I really don't believe that to be true. Not that every business arrangement and business partnership is perfect, and not say we haven't had a disagreement or two through the years, but the Breeders' Cup, you got to look at the event. We're 142 years old as the Kentucky Derby. The Breeders' Cup has just cracked 30, just gone past 30. So that event, that's an event still taking shape, and they're looking to see what's the best for that organization, what's the future going to hold. And they looked at several years in California. I think it's been looked at some point as maybe a permanent host site in California. And I think it was things like that. And then we had this opportunity. I thought we had it back a couple of years ago. I thought we were going to land it a couple of years ago. And this year worked out, and we're thrilled that with the news that's going to return. I know a lot of fans and a lot of business people in this region and civic.
Oh, yeah, it's a big, big deal. And I was reading a story you wrote in the Voice Tribune about some memories you had and – I remember '88 being that, like, it got dark.
And debut of night racing at Churchill Downs, but it was accidental.
Without lights.
Ali Sheba came home in the Classic that day. Still, for me, and again, I think anybody in this community that has known me at all in my years here since '82 knows how much I love the Kentucky Derby and Churchill Downs, but the Derby and Oaks and where they stand for me. But I've never had a better overall day at the races than the 1988 Breeders' Cup here. It was just magical. Despite, gunmetal gray skies.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you won a lot of money.
I didn't cash a ticket, which is not abnormal. But it's the best day, top to bottom, in terms of competition I've ever spent at a racetrack.
All right. Well, let's talk about the Derby. Mm-hmm. I hear stories or hear you talking about it. You kind of don't do well on picking the winner.
I do what a lot of people do on Derby Day, and you lead with your heart instead of your head sometimes. It's almost impossible not to get wrapped up in some story. That's part of it. I mean, know these horses better than you know any other race you see through the year. On a Wednesday afternoon, the seventh race, they might just be numbers on paper to you. On Derby Day, they're flesh and blood creatures with stories and people behind them, and a lot of tears are shed for winners on Derby Day, and a lot shed for losers. It's a different thing, and
it's all about the names sometimes, right?
Names, colors. One of my favorite Derby handicapping methods that I've shared through the years, and people always seem to love it, is the hat pin method, where you wear the great hat on Derby Day. You take out the pin, you stick it through the program, and bet every horse that has a hole in its name. That's a time honored winner. But I always tell people, come to the Derby, have fun. If you want to, you're going to stay up all night, stay up all for 2 weeks, and handicap. That's a great thing. But also, if you want to come out and bet your favorite color, bet your niece's name, bet your phone number, there's all kinds of waiting.
Now, I heard one that I think all us press guys are going to like, right? Sudden breaking news,
and I think he's a long shot, but he's a long shot with a chance. He's trained by a gentleman named Don Von Hemmel, who's never won a Kentucky Derby, and I think only has competed in a couple. But, yeah, he's one of those great names. Thoroughbred horse names are limited to 18 characters. It includes all spaces. So Sudden Breaking News is 18, but you got no spaces in it. So it's one of those all jammed together names. But he's a come-from-behind horse. Ran really well last time out in the Arkansas Derby, which is a race I think is better than a lot of people think it was. And he will surprise me not a little bit if he at least hits the board at 25, 30, 40 to 1 on Derby.
Okay. And now, from what I've heard, and I'm not paying attention like you do, but I talk to a lot of people, this horse Nyquist is likely to be the favorite.
He will be the favorite. I'm guessing Mike Battaglia, depending on post position. Mike still does our morning line, although he's retired from race calling, and he no longer works on the NBC telecast. He's kind of getting he's moving into elder statesman form for us. But he does the morning line for us. I'm guessing Nyquist, again, without a bad post, probably about 3 to 1. He's unbeaten. What else do you want? Last unbeaten horse to win the Derby was Smarty Jones back in 2004. But he's done everything they've asked him to. It's from the team that won the Derby just a few years back with I'll Have Another. Again, in his last race, he beat the horse that was probably going to be the Derby favorite before they met, a horse named Mohamed, and beat him pretty soundly. So
yeah, I saw Mohamed on the backside last week.
Who's looked fantastic
looking
here,
great,
which is always a good sign. But we're going to have a full gate of 20. We'll have the full gate entered on Wednesday of Derby week, and then we see what happens. You know, you can't stop holding your breath until they break from the gate on Derby day, if you're an owner or trainer. But it's a very competitive group. You know, last year we had the first Triple Crown winner in 37 years, and how much did that do for our sport? It did amazing things, and high bar to clear, but it's not to say, if you look back over history, Triple Crown winners have come in bunches, so who knows? Maybe there's one lurking in this group. But
three in the 70s, right?
Sure, three in the 70s. We had four in the 40s. We had three in the 30s, and the first two were Triple Crown winners and didn't know it. They weren't Triple Crown winners until retroactively. But now we have a dozen, even dozen after American Pharoah, and a lot of possibilities in this race. I wouldn't be surprised to see the favorite win the race or to see a 40-1 shot come in. It's a really competitive group.
All right. Well, I want to ask you. You recall these stats like one right after the other. And I used to take pride in like going out in the infield and drinking and having the Derby shirt on and could tell you like half the names of the horses. Uh-huh. But you actually like seem to be able to remember every Derby.
It's good. Good to like what you're doing. I'm not going to say my memory's flawless, but there's a lot of information rolling around in there. And although, you know, as you get older, you don't download it as quickly, but it's up there.
I know, like when I was in like college, I could go back to 1960 and flawlessly do it. And now, I can't tell you. I know who won last year, but maybe not the year before. It's a weird thing your memory, your mind does to you.
Yeah, that's why the internet's a great thing. It's good to do phone interviews with a monitor in front of you.
All right. So how is we're getting close. Yep. Tell me about your routine. People are, I think interested in your job. You're well known. People know who you are, what you do, but what do you actually do? Let's say, what do you do on Derby Day?
On Derby Day, I get here early in the morning. I've only spent one Oaks night here. That's back in 2010 when we had incredible rain all day long. New stormy weather was coming. The Weather Channel had showed up in the middle of the week. Jim Cantore had shown up, which is a sign of the apocalypse. You know, we knew it was going to be tough. So I stayed here that night, short night, got up, took a shower, and at 5 a.m., that morning, Renee Murphy from Channel 11 was knocking on the window of my office wanting an update on the weather. So it's a good thing I stayed that night. But get here early in the morning. You know, I go to the backside on a normal Derby day, go back in the barn areas, check on everybody, make sure everything's okay, do a few TV interviews, radio interviews. I have to park on the backside that day. Derby parking, as you know, is a special thing. So I eventually walk around the far turn and come in, actually come through the tunnels, through the infield, and come over to my office, and then through the day. You know, racing's here early, 10:30 in the morning. We deal with whatever stories are going on that day. Sometimes we have a scratch the morning of the race. Sometimes it's nice and smooth and quiet. Through the race day, as the along with dealing with the phone calls, media demands, things of that nature, and trying to sneak to see family now and then at some point during the day.
When the NBA, you got to have a little fun.
You need to try to, and it is. During the day, while the NBC telecast is going on through the day, I have a standing duty that while the races are on television, I go to the winner's circle after every race. I'm standing by in case some comment needs to be made on behalf of the track. If there's an injury or a mishap or just something they need to come for me for, I'm there all day. So most times it's quiet. I make the trip. I say hello to everybody. I wish them happy Derby, and I go back to the office. But occasionally there's something going on. So that's the pattern until we get up to Derby. Do a few things during the day as well in terms of introducing a national anthem singer, things like that. And then after the Derby, we get through the Derby, and I'm the MC of the post-race press conference, and then you wrap up a wonderful day. I'd normally walk out of here about 12:30 or 1 in the morning and trudge back to my car on the backside and then head home and come back at 6 in the morning.
Wow. And that's after a full week. How many nights a week do you go out and have official duties, like at parties?
Do a lot of public speaking. Don't make parties too often. Not too often. Do a lot of public speaking the week before Derby week. I've got events scheduled 3 nights of the week. I've got a couple of breakfasts scheduled, some lunches that go and speak to people. Opening night, the weekend, and opening week of the track's always exciting. And then during the week itself, got a few dinners that I'm a regular at, and some other events that show up at. So it's not. I'd love to tell you I could sit here and tell you everything that's going on, but I just check the calendar daily and hope I haven't forgotten to enter anything. But it's always good, and it leads us to the first Friday and Saturday in May, and that's a great place to be.
which is, and this is how we'll close it, how far away, when is the Derby?
The Derby, as of this moment we're sitting here?
As this is the moment we're recording this interview.
We're recording this on Wednesday. It is Wednesday.
Okay. It is Wednesday.
Again, that's how my schedule goes. It is Wednesday. We are 10 days away from the Kentucky Derby. My clock turns over every day at 6:50 because the race is generally run at that point. That's on Saturday, May 7th, about 6:50 or so, the race will be done. And for me, that's like midnight. We flip it over and we start counting it down for next year's Derby. So by the end of this day, as we're speaking on Wednesday, when we hit 6:45, 6:50 p.m., it'll be 9 days for me till Kentucky Derby.
Heiser Health, your complete health source for preventative medicine and optimum health. Visit the experts of medical doctors and nurse practitioners so they can evaluate your overall health and your health as you age. Heiser Health uses the primary preventative technique of nutrition with real food and effective exercise. If you qualify, you may need hormone replacement to optimize your health. Call the experts at Heiser Health, 502-882-4252.
And I'm Mark Hebert. I'm one of the co-hosts on the Rusty Satellite Show, and I'm one of the most interesting people in the Ville.
The only co-host this week, Heeb, and you are really great. We go back a long way, as a lot of people know, from being college roommates at WK.
Long time ago.
That was a long time ago. But we still play golf, and we're on a bowling team, and we do all this stuff. And
still hang out together.
And we still hang out. And we used to, I guess my clearest memory of John is the most recent one, when last January we went to this game down at WKU, which, you know, I just wonder if students follow their college teams as much as we
No, they don't. I can assure you they don't.
They didn't go to Austin Peay.
No, they didn't travel all over the OVC wearing funny hats and raising hell in opposing gyms.
That's right. Well, we did, you know, I think I remember. John was like a year ahead of you, right?
I think he was. He may have been 2 years ahead of me. I don't remember. I first met John Asher when I don't think I had him in any classes at Western. I remember first meeting him because he was a mutual friend of ours, the late Jeff Crawford, and they both worked at WBGN Radio in Bowling Green, and I was WKCT Radio in Bowling Green. And that's when we first met, started hanging around together, was when we were both in Bowling Green together.
Yeah, it was fun times, since, you know, it was fun remembering that trip and walking around Diddle Arena with Asher, and, you know, everybody we ran into.
Everybody knew him.
Yeah. He got us great seats with no problems, and everybody knew him. He's really a celebrity there, as well as, you know, he is everywhere else.
And for those who know John best, know that he was probably the biggest Hilltopper basketball fan in Louisville, Kentucky, if not in the state of Kentucky. And he could walk. He knew all the former players.
I know.
I mean, Jim McDaniel and those guys, they would just come up and they knew, hey, John, how you doing? It's like, wow, that's Jim McDaniel. You know, it's kind of weird to walk around with John.
He had that great nickname for, I don't even know who the current player is, but he called him Sideshow Bob, and it was a very...
Yeah, I don't remember who that was either.
Guy had a lot of hair. So anyway, we did have a great time. I don't know what I'm going to do. That's how I kept up with whether Western was going to be any good or not, is I would talk to John about it. So,
and he would know.
And he would know.
and I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think he was the head of the Western Alumni Association for 1 year, the president of the Western Alumni.
Yeah, he sure was. I remember that from our recent trip down there. And so what about, we went down there with the three of us and your son Andrew.
Yep, had a big time.
It was all good. So speaking of things that John went to a lot, this is a stretch for a segue. John was probably the most regular attendee of the Breakfast of Champions of anybody outside of the group that runs it, and he was just interested in the things that were going on and the speakers that we had, and it. It often had nothing to do with his job or his anything else. He was
a curious guy. He wanted to know more about everything, and as you know, you've got a pretty eclectic music taste and a music aficionado. Well, John Asher was probably an even bigger music aficionado. And
I'm sure he knew who Steve Forbert was.
Well, I know who Steve Forbert is.
He still is.
He's still playing. But John knew, I mean, I used to read his little blips on Twitter and Facebook every week where he'd post something about some new artist or somebody he just heard. And
yeah, he kept up with new artists as well as like he loved Elvis Costello, which was also cool.
But back to your point, very, very curious about all things going. You could talk politics, sports, music, pop culture, history, Western Kentucky sports. I mean, he just knew a lot about a lot of different things. A very curious guy.
All right, and we will miss John coming up September 17th. I'm assuming you might be there.
I would be there, except I'm going to be on vacation.
Oh.
Sorry. Not going to be there.
Anybody work one place so long, you have to take, like, vacation every month, don't you?
No, I wish I could. But no, I do not. But Neely Bendapudi is going to be at the
Neely
Breakfast
Bendapudi
of Champions.
Is going to be at the Breakfast of Champions. She was great. I went over to, a couple weeks ago on this show, went over to the, she corrected me on the name of the place. It's not Amelia Place where we were, but Ainsley Place.
Which is the little house next to Amelia Place.
Yeah, on Longest. It's great that she's, like, living there.
Oh, yeah. That's the first time that we've had a president live in that house, which is owned by the University of Louisville Foundation over there in the Highlands. Jim Ramsey, when he was president, lived out in Oldham County and preferred to keep his daughters in that school district out there when they were younger. So he did not live in the home that was owned by the University of Louisville Foundation. Neely Bendapudi is living there, and the foundation's doing some renovations, badly needed renovations on that that house. But she's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, she was moving in, like, in the process of moving in when I was over there that day. And so, anyway, for people that don't know, you run a show just like this.
I do.
Over there at U of L.
I do.
Tell us about that.
Well, it's U of L Today with Mark Hebert. It's on Monday and Tuesday nights on 93.9 The Ville. You can also find it on SoundCloud. And what I do is I tell all the interesting and cool things and good news coming out of the University of Louisville, where I have guests just like you do. I have researchers or students or faculty and staff at U of L come in and talk about what research they're working on, or in case of students, if they've won some big award, or they're a Fulbright scholar or something, I have them come out and talk about their time at U of L and their adventures across the world. So hope folks will tune in every once in a while and listen to what's going on at the University of Louisville.
Well, it's cool that we kind of end up doing a similar thing.
Since we started together, and
one of my former guests, I understand, is going to be on your show in the very near future. And you're shaking your head. John Gilderbloom,
the all 8'6" of him. Yes, we're going to talk to John about a book he has recently published. He's an urban planning professor at the University of Louisville, and he's going to come out and talk about his book. He's going to talk about what he does at the University of Louisville.
Yeah, it's he's quite a character.
Character's a good word.
It's a lot of fun. I had a part in editing that book. So the book is called Chromatic Homes. It was originally going to be called Painted Ladies, and he ran into some sort of
copyright infringement
copyright
or something. Yeah,
issue, and came up with this other lesser name, I think.
Chromatic Homes.
So
wasn't there a horse in the Derby named Chromatic or something like that? Or what was that?
You may be
horse?
Thinking of Charismatic. If John Asher was here,
right.
He could tell you.
But John Asher could fix that for us. And he could probably tell us the Charismatic splits at 6 furlongs.
Yeah, exactly. Derby. Yeah. I caught John one time. I think one of his appearances on the show, I asked him, I was testing his knowledge, and I asked him randomly, who won the 1960 Kentucky Derby, and he gave me an answer that was 1 year off.
Oh.
Believe it or not.
Well, that might be the only time that ever happened.
He really felt bad about that.
I'm sure he did.
Because it was out there. So, anyway, so that's going on at U of L. Now, at U of L, you have a big job. You got a lot of things you do over there. I understand you... Bobby Petrino checks with you for his game plan every week, right?
Yes, Coach Petrino calls me up and says, who should I start at running back? And, should we do the play action passes on third down against Wake Forest or not? Yeah, he often calls me.
Well, how you must ask him how he's going to beat Alabama.
I have not asked him that. I just assume we're going to beat Alabama.
It's a big game. Well, you brought me my football season tickets today, and we're back there in the flight deck. up there. One of my recent guests, Stephen George, who's now
sits right behind us.
He sits right behind us. He's a big shot, but he says he's going to be back there. He's not going to move down.
He's a big muckety muck at public radio. Yeah.
It's great. So we got a great section up there. If you, the first home game is September 8th against Indiana State, and then our boys.
The Western Kentucky University Hilltoppers will be there.
You think Western's got a shot?
No.
Okay.
They're going to be bad this year. They are not going to be good.
Well, I will have my red towel regardless, and we'll be
cheering that game. I just wear red to
that game.
I just wear red.
My rule is you have to cheer for your alma mater no matter what.
Well, that's an interesting rule. I can't cheer against the people who are writing my paycheck. Yeah, I can't do that.
That's a deal. Now, my girlfriend Paula has an interesting thing coming up because her Central Michigan Chippewas opened the season at UK.
She's a big UK fan. So who's she rooting for, the Chippewas or the Wildcats?
I told her she has to go with my rule. And
what'd she say? She probably doesn't listen to you like
most
times.
Yeah, I like the Chips.
Okay.
She's
a pretty diehard UK fan.
She's got a Central Michigan.
Sometimes she gets on
shirt.
Our nerves when we play UK at home at Cardinal Stadium.
Yeah, irritating when she wears that blue crap. So we don't like we really don't like that. But anyway,
but we still like her.
We do like her, and that's what's important. So, Mark, anything else you're doing over there at U of L that? So you help coach the football team, you do your radio show, and you used to be like the number one spokesperson for the president.
That's
John Carman. That's John Carman. Cub reporter at Business First.
Who used to be a Cub reporter at Business First. He's been through a war the last couple of years.
You know how we always said at the fraternity, you say, you're always a pledge to me.
That's how you refer to
I told him the other
Carman.
Day, you're always the Cub reporter to me.
No, I also do every week I have a I put together a video story about something going on at the University of Louisville, and I'm on Great Day Live on Mondays on WHAS TV with Terry Miners and Rachel Platt. I always talk to them and bring something interesting about U of L to that program every Monday morning, and WLKY and WHAS also air those stories.
I appreciate a lot of cool shit. The last time you were here, I remember I think. Tell me if I'm wrong. I had you on because you bowled a 300 game.
I did. I haven't bowled one lately, though. In fact, last week we stunk. So
you bowled a 121. I wanted to let everybody know.
You bowled less.
I bowled less.
You bowled a 120. So.
We were rusty.
That was the first week of bowling. But I would say to all your listeners, all the good things you're hearing about Neely Bendabudi at the University of Louisville, and they're all true. She's very dynamic, very down to earth at the same time, and so we're pretty excited to have her on campus.
Yeah, she's great. She sold me. I mean, I was charmed by her. In our interview. So one last thing I want to mention is our we have another podcast around here called Eat Drink Talk. Mm-hmm. You probably listened to that. Carolyn Gaeta McLean is my co-host. This week we were talking about the Logan Street Market. We had some Jeff Brantley, a chef, and Sarah Hyde, who's running the Logan Street Market. You know what the Logan Street Market is?
I have no idea what the Logan Street Market is.
Down in Shelby Park, they're...
I do know where Shelby Park is.
They're doing a... they aspire to be like a thing called Fenley Park in Cincinnati, or even the most famous Pikes Peak in Seattle, and it's going to be an outdoor open market.
I didn't know that was the name of it, but I have heard about it.
There's going to be a brewery in there. There's all kinds of stuff. You can hear all about it on Eat Drink Talk, where we talk about restaurants and stuff. And I did notice one restaurant story worth talking about here, the Red Herring. You ever been there?
Mm-mm, have not.
Well, you better hurry. It's closing September 16th. It was announced today. It's a tough business. Well, that big corner in Clifton where the Hilltop Tavern, one of our favorite places, is in the Silver Bullet are there, and then it's been
Silver Bullet.
And then they have the Champagnery just opened on the corner. So there's a lot of stuff going on, and there's another restaurant that just opened right next to the Champagnery. So it's a tough spot. I read the story in Business First or in Insider Louisville, and the Red Herring guy said, we want to open somewhere else. What better place than across the street from me at Barbara Lee's? I just want to plant that seed. If they could get a bulldozer, go through that place. Barbara Lee's, I looked up, has only been closed since since 2017 to close in 2017.
Career. I was there like 2 weeks before it closed.
Oh, man.
Went and had breakfast on a Sunday morning, and then we went back like 3 weeks later, and there was nobody there. It was closed up.
Well, you recovered from the breakfast, I guess.
Yes, I did. So. Did not get any food poisoning or anything. It was great.
I live right across the street, and I'm too cheap to go to Pat's next door. But anyway, last thing, and then we got to go, is the yesterday I became as old as you.
Once yes, again. You are old for a few months, or actually for a few weeks.
We're both 58 years old as of this moment, and you know, you got a birthday.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, thank you. I went out to Brendan's Catch 23.
Hey, you told me it was good.
Yesterday, it was great. Had fish. It's all you know, I like you, you had to adjust your diet at a certain age, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I like well-prepared fish, and you can't get it at a whole lot of places. So this is, I'd never been there, and it was neat. I was able to sit near where my cubicle was back when that building housed Business First.
Oh, really? Because it's in the same building right there on 4th Street?
Yeah, it's in the same room. You look up the ceiling. Oh, that's the ceiling.
You can look and see if there's any pencils or paper airplanes that were thrown up into the ceiling tiles, there, right?
I wrote, Rick was here.
Well, happy birthday.
Yeah, it's all great.
And you can wish me a preliminary happy birthday here in a couple
weeks.
Yeah,
early happy birthday to you.
I will be older than you again here in a couple of weeks.
That'll be great. I did on my birthday, as I should do, I work out every day. I did 15 miles on my bike.
Wow.
Dodging traffic, getting honked at, all that stuff. So it's great to be able to do that at our advanced age.
Yep, still active.
Next up, it's the Bourbon City Guest of the Week, brought to you by the Louisville Convention and Visitors Bureau. Get a different taste.
All right, and the Rusty Satellite Show has traveled all the way out. We're in Shelbyville, right?
Shelbyville, yes.
With Joyce Nethery and Autumn Nethery, mm-hmm. who are part of this great family out here that is built from scratch. I remember, you can tell me, Joyce, how many years ago was it I said, passing by on 64, I say, something's going up over there.
Yeah. Well, we started construction with the road and the bridge in 2014. So now the building actually started going up in 2015. It's been a couple of years coming here.
Yeah. And now it's such a beautiful facility. I'm very interested in, you told me the background, it's a family business out here at Jephthah Creed.
Yeah.
And tell me about that. It's not only a family business, but it combines the things that you're interested in.
Absolutely. We are a family business. My daughter and I are the owners, so we are woman-owned. But my husband and my son are also heavily involved in what we're doing. My son takes care of our bees, so our honey vodka has honey from his bees in it. And my husband is our agricultural expert, so he is in charge of growing our corn,
which
is our heirloom varietal called Bloody Butcher.
I know, I've never seen anything like this. Listeners out there, this corn is dark red. It looks like the color of a red wine.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
And what makes that the type you want to use for your products here?
Well, we think it has a beautiful flavor profile. The first year we grew this, we grew it in a field next to a field of non-GMO yellow, because this Bloody Butcher corn is non-GMO. It is open pollinated, and it has been documented in use since 1845. And the first year we grew it, we watched the deer and the turkeys, and we watched them go through the yellow corn to get to our Bloody Butcher field to eat.
Okay.
And they ate it up like crazy, so I'm like, well, I want to use it too.
So this stuff is good.
Yes.
Have you eaten it? Absolutely. Wow.
Corn on the cob stage, this corn is actually white, and it turns red as it dries in the field.
Okay. Well, very cool. That is cool. I want to turn to Autumn here, who is your daughter and the marketing manager here at Jephthah Creed. And certainly in a place like Shelbyville, you've made a splash. A lot of people are just coming out here because you've got a bar, you've got food.
Yeah, we've got the bar, we've got food. So during the week, we're serving lunch from the time we open till about 4 o'clock, and we have soups, sandwiches, salads, and pizza.
Okay.
And then on Fridays and Saturdays, we're serving pizza for dinner until about 8 o'clock. And on Friday nights, we have live music every single week, and we bring out different local acts.
Jamming at Jephthah.
Yeah.
Jamming at Jephthah. And I saw a flyer up there about some of that. Where do they perform? Is it in here?
They don't perform inside unless there's been inclement weather.
Okay.
We've got a stage out back where they will perform on. And then if there's bad weather, if it's still warm outside, we've got the covered patio where they can perform under.
So how many,
or during the winter, they perform in the clubhouse.
Okay. How many people you pull in?
Oh, gosh.
Everybody in Shelbyville, right?
Pretty much, it seems like.
In the surrounding area.
In the surrounding area. Yes. People coming from Louisville, Oldham County, Frankfort.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds great. And you do tours. Also, Autumn,
yes.
You were telling me you can come out and do a tour for $10.
Yep.
And that includes a cocktail at the end?
It doesn't include a cocktail at the end, but what it does include is that you can do a tasting.
Okay.
You can pick four out of any of our products that we have available at that time. You can pick four of those to try, and you get a shot glass to take home with you.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. Well, Joyce, I want to know a little bit more about the science behind it, because right now I only see vodka and moonshine, right? I don't see any bourbon. Why is that?
Bourbon is coming. Bourbon needs this time in the barrel to age, and all of our Jephthah Creed bourbons are going to be straight. And that word straight means it needs to age in the barrel at least 2 years. We opened about a little bit over a year and a half ago, so we don't have straight bourbon yet. We will in the spring. So what we have right now is our beautiful vodka, which is made 100% out of our Bloody Butcher corn. We have our moonshines, which are all flavored with natural flavors, and they're all really, really delightful.
Okay. Now, this is where I'm interested in your background, because you told me the only way to know all this is to know something about chemical engineering, right?
That's my background. My background's in chemical engineering. I have a master's degree from University of Louisville, and I've worked in the chemical industry in distillation, and have experience there and applying it now to the bourbon industry. And I just have to say the bourbon side of things and distilling bourbon is a lot more fun.
It seems like it. Well, I know this isn't your first job out of college. What are some of the things you did before you became a distiller? Because you are the master distiller here.
That's an important distinction. My first job, like I said, was as a process engineer for a company called Roman Haas, which was just outside Campground Road, in their distillation unit, distilling methylmethacrylate. Then several years doing that, then I left to become a high school chemistry and physics teacher.
Okay.
And I taught 30 teenagers in a room, classroom management skills, hugely important.
Okay.
That also applies when we got big bachelor parties here. Classroom management skills apply there too. And then I left teaching to become a chief financial officer for some companies that my husband and I started.
Okay.
So accounts payable, accounts receivable, depreciation schedule, all those business functions.
Wow.
I learned about those. And so it's really serendipitous how all of those things come together to be able to run the distillery.
Yeah, and it's quite a career change. I mean, certainly you must have the entrepreneurial spirit. But, what... Was there something that made you say, all right, I've done enough of this, let's build this great place out in Shelbyville and do all this?
Well, my husband's background is in agricultural. Grew up as a dairy farmer, and we still live on the farm. And we wanted to combine our love for the land and our love and respect for the soil with my engineering. So he grows the corn, I distill it. And then we like to say that Autumn gets it out the door.
That's right. Well, Autumn, that's a challenging job in itself. Now, what's your background? You grew up around this whole business, the farm and everything.
Yeah. I did.
And did you study marketing?
Well, I did study marketing. When they first brought up the idea of building a family distillery to me, I was underage. I was 18 years old at the time. So I was just starting to kind of plan out my education and just figuring out what it was that I really wanted to do. And at the time, I was studying film.
Okay.
Which, about the same time they brought this up, was when I realized I wasn't going to make it have a long-lasting career and that would support me well for film. And so I turned to marketing. And when we decided to do the distillery, they took me to all of the distilleries in the area because we've been blessed to live within 40 miles of every major bourbon distillery in the world.
So you know what goes into a tour.
So you know what goes into the tour, yes. So that's that's when I really decided that this was the field I wanted to get into, and I tailored my education towards bourbon and spirits and marketing those products.
Where was that?
I bounced around a little bit.
Okay.
I did a semester abroad through the Semester at Sea program where I went around the world. And while I was traveling, I really studied how different cultures and different countries market their spirits.
Okay.
And then I lived in Scotland for a year studying brewing and distilling.
Wow.
Before coming back to Kentucky and finishing up my marketing degree at UK.
Okay. Okay. Well, very good. Well, I'm going to ask, I don't know who will answer this, but something always comes up when you talk about a place with an unusual name, which is, where did Jephthah Creed come from?
Well, the home farm that I've mentioned is at the foothills of some hills here in Shelby County called the Jephthah Knobs.
Okay.
And those knobs were named by Squire Boone and Daniel Boone when they came in and explored Kentucky in the late 1700s. They were attracted to those hills because there was a salt lick up there. So that's where the buffalo and the deer and the turkey were. So I like to say it was the grocery store of their day. And we found documentation that says they named him Jephthah after a biblical warrior in Judges 11.
Okay.
So we want to be all about our local history, heritage, and culture. And there I've got personal family history right there because that's where we raised our children. That's where I still live. And then we have local and state history with the Boones. And we have Bible history connected to it.
Yeah.
There's nothing better. That's perfect.
It's like, and I'm sure that in the tour we hear all about that history.
Yes.
And
yeah, we tell you all about that history in the tour. And we tell you all about our products and how we grow our products, everything.
Okay. Okay. So I'm curious about next year when bourbon comes along because, you know, it seems like there's so many more, it doesn't seem like it. There are more distilleries now than 10, 20, 30 years ago.
Absolutely.
Around here. How's that going to change things for you when you actually have bourbon to sell?
Oh, it's going to be so exciting. It's going to be so neat. Like I said, all of our bourbons are going to be straight, so they need to be at least two. Our first bourbon is coming out spring of next year, 2019. It's going to be our four-grain bourbon, so it's going to consist of our Bloody Butcher corn. It's going to have rye, wheat, and barley in it.
Okay.
And it's going to have aged at least the 2 years, and it's gorgeous. It's going to be gorgeous.
And I guess you've got an idea what it's going to taste like. And
yes. We have a small batch coming out right now called Bloody Butcher's Creed. It's our batch number 5. It's our experimental line of bourbons and whiskeys. And what that batch is like at a year and a half age.
Okay.
It's essentially the four-grain batch at a year and a half, and it's truly lovely.
Okay, so next spring it'll be the product that you put in barrels in 2017.
In 2016.
Yeah,
2017, 2018. We really started distilling about October of 2016.
Wow.
So it'll be towards the end of 2016.
Yeah.
And what's interesting for us too is it's not just the 2 years in the barrel for us. We plan back even a year ahead of that because we have to grow the corn.
Okay.
So we started planning this batch back in 2015.
Wow.
When we started planting the corn.
Wow. What, I mean, was this a long-term goal of yours to have a place like this, like when you were much younger? Or when did the idea ferment in your head?
The idea really came about, it started with my husband. It was his idea.
Mm-hmm.
And he kept talking about it, and he needed some training to do it, so I found Moonshine University in Louisville, the Distilled Spirits Epicenter, and got him signed up for the class. But then he couldn't go. So I went.
So you went.
So I went, and I fell back in love with my engineering, and I fell back in love with copper. But I came out of that class with this concept of ground to glass, that we could do something truly unique and distinct and grow an heirloom varietal of corn, distill it, and have a beautiful value-added product that is truly awesome.
Okay. Okay. Well, I am looking forward to that in the spring. Meanwhile, I guess your vodkas are seeming like doing. It's a beautiful bottle. Are they for sale anywhere but here?
Yes. our vodkas and our moonshine products are both for sale at many local stores.
Okay.
Liquor Barn, Total Wine, a lot of independents like Westport Whiskey and Wine also carry our products. So there's plenty of places that you can go pick it up in the Louisville area. If you go on our website, on our Where to Buy page, and you type in your zip code, and it'll populate the stores and restaurants near you that carry our products.
All right. But the best thing to do, I guess, is come out here and see where it's made, and then buy it off the shelf.
We yes. think it's a truly awesome place to come buy it.
It sounds great. Well, I appreciate y'all having me out here. I really have enjoyed visiting and seeing the place. I've been wondering about it for a long time.
Well, it's great to have you here. Hope you stay and enjoy it.
All right, and now you know all about Jephtha Creed. Our the Netherys, our Bourbon City Guest of the Week. I really appreciate them welcoming me out there in Shelbyville. It's a lot of fun. All right, there's a lot going on this week. Thanks to Mark Hebert for coming in and being a part of the show. Our guest co-host, his lovely parting gifts he left with. He actually left me with our season football tickets that we're looking forward to. This weekend, there's a lot going on in town, and I'm not going to be here because I'm very happy to be going to watch the U of L football game against Alabama in Denver, Colorado. That's where my son Josh lives, and we're going out there to hang out with them for a few days. I am really excited. I'm going to... the big attraction for me, I went several years ago and went to the Red Rocks Amphitheater, but there was no act going on. So I found out that my man, Lyle Lovett, is going to be playing at the Red Rocks Amphitheater next Tuesday. I'm going to be there, and along with Paula and Josh and his wife, Sarah. And so that's going to be a lot of fun. And here's what I'm missing in town. World Fest is going on at the Belvedere this weekend. And also, the Rock the Water Tower event, great bunch of rock and roll. I think the Crashers are playing there. That's going to be a lot of fun. That's something I might do if I were here. I would certainly do the Mayor's Hike and Bike, which is coming up on Monday. I've done almost every one of those on my bike, like riding around with Mayor Fisher, who actually participates some years. Sometimes he does the hike, or sometimes he does the paddle, but sometimes he does the bike. So if you're in town, that's a great event, especially if the weather's nice. Down at Waterfront Park, the Hike and Bike. A reminder that, as I mentioned with Mark, the September 17th is the Breakfast of Champions with Neely Bendapudi as our speaker. There's a Facebook page you can sign up on, and for $20 you can go in and see there, hang out with us. It was one of the best networking events in town. So that's a lot of fun too. Anyway, I'm happy that I'm able to be with you here on the Rusty Satellite Show. I always have the most interesting people in the bill as guests. It must be the longest running and coolest podcast in the city by now, I hope. There is a Best of Louisville contest going on at Leo Weekly. I would love it if you go online and vote for the Rusty Satellite Show as the best local podcast. That would be a nice feather in my cap to have. Let me tell you what's coming up. This is a rare thing, but I already have my guest lined up for next week on the Rusty Satellite Show. We're going to have Tom Owen. If you get the Voice Tribune, you'll see a story I've written about Tom and his knowledge of neighborhoods. The former Metro Councilman is going strong, riding his bike around at 78 years old. He'll be my guest next week, along with some folks promoting the Bourbon and Beyond Festival as our Bourbon City Guest of the Week. It'll be Fred Minnick and Doris Sims, and you'll hear all about them on the Rusty Satellite Show next week. So did a little planning because to make for this trip that I'm going on to Colorado. And so I'm looking forward to that. It's been a great couple of weeks here in Louisville and with the Rusty Satellite Show. So thanks for tuning in. Tell your friends about it. Find us at RustySatelliteShow.com and look for my stuff at LouisvilleKY.com as well. And we have Twitter handles Ricky Redding and at Rusty Satellite. That's it for now. I'll be back next week with another episode of the Rusty Satellite Show.
Thanks for listening to the Rusty Satellite Podcast with your host, Rick Redding. Next week, Rick will be right back here on Louisville.am with another stellar lineup of great guests. You can let Rick know what you think by sending an email to rick@louisvilleky.com. He's on Twitter, too, @RickyRedding. For more information about the show, including photos of Rusty Satellite Show guests, go to louisvilleky.com, the pulse of the city.